one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, Phillies, Mattingly magic continues. We're workshopping it. We were talking before the show. We're going to workshop it. And, you know, Liz's advice before the show, and I didn't follow it, was that it's got to be natural. It's got to flow. It's got to feel like the right thing. But I didn't care. I went ahead anyway because the Phillies are 6-1 under Don Mattingly after taking 3 out of 4 from the Marlins in Miami over the weekend, playing decent baseball, certainly better baseball than they had been playing up until this past week. So we're going to talk about it here on this edition of the Roundtable, all the stuff that happened from this week in Miami. Great pitching performances really throughout the weekend, and the offense doing just enough for the most part. Liz Rocher and Justin Clue with me. Liz Rocher, of course, is the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. You can follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Hello, Liz. Happy Monday. How are you doing?
I'm good. At least one team thus far has won tonight of the night of three Philly sports. And at least that's good. One team has won, and I think we can take that home and be happy about it.
Yeah, as we are recording this, obviously the Flyers and the Sixers are both playing. The Flyers are in overtime, tied 2-2 against the Hurricanes. And man, the Sixers are absolutely getting bare bottom spanked by the New York Knicks here in game one of their series. So, you know, they left it all on the floor in game seven, so maybe you need a night to recover anyway. But yes, the Phillies did their part, and I'm sure, clearly, the city will be most excited about their 1-0 win on Monday, no matter what the Flyers and the Sixers manage to do. Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus also is here, author of the book Summer of the Cheap Wieners, which you can see over my right shoulder behind me. You can follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue, and you can also read his work at Baseball Prospectus. Justin, how you feeling, buddy?
Well, if you were crazy enough to watch electric playoff hockey tonight, instead of the regular season Monday night Phillies baseball game, you missed a discussion between T-Mac and Ruben Amaro on how many lights were on in their booth and how there may be too many lights on in their booth. You also missed Ruben Amaro using the phrase luscious moss. So don't you feel stupid.
I got to know what that was in reference to. I didn't hear that.
I believe
He's
it was
a really
someone's
bad
hair.
Broadcaster, man.
Oh, someone's hair.
I'm just telling you what you missed watching the other sporting events. All right. And I feel like, you know, these were key moments in the Phillies season. Yeah. I also wanted to mention nightmare news out of Detroit as Tarek Skubal is going to have arthroscopic surgery to remove loose bodies from his elbow. It kind of throws that season and sort of his career into a bit of disarray. Unrelated, when they make a heated rivalry, but for baseball, loose bodies would be a terrific title.
It would be. It would absolutely. I had a great idea for a Texas Rangers podcast, Ranger Things. But I don't think anybody grabbed onto it and ran with it.
You don't want to talk about more heated rivalry? You know, you don't want to talk more about heated rivalry, but for baseball, John?
It's a solid transition.
I'm so down.
We were talking about Thank hockey, you. So I Thank feel you. Like it's relevant.
Yeah, Ranger Things. I know. Well, listen, this series against the Marlins, it was a good series win, but, you know, there's...
Wait, was he talking about
it's
hockey?
A good win. It's a good
Didn't
win.
Say...
Three out of four.
Let's
Didn't you
yeah,
say
so...
Texas Rangers? That is baseball.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Flyers game, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is hockey.
Oh, but were we talking about the Flyers game?
That's the thing. I'm like, were we?
I don't know.
Were you here for the opening of the show? Liz, you brought up the hockey game. What the hell are you talking about?
It's 2-2 in the overtime period, 14 minutes left. We'll keep you updated on Flyers Hurricanes here during the course of the podcast, let you know who wins game two. But we will go over this series in Miami. Phillies take 3 out of 4. They win on Friday 6-5. They almost blew that lead late, but managed to hang on. On Saturday, the Marlins shut out the Phillies 4-0. The Phillies got one hit in that game on a outfielder Garrett Stubbs single. We're going to talk about outfielder Garrett Stubbs in just a second. On Sunday, the Phillies won 7-2 thanks to a 6-run first inning and a Bryson Stott 3-run home run. And then on Monday, the Phillies win 1-0. Harper hits a home run. Aaron Nola has one of his best starts of the season. And Garrett Stubbs, maybe the star of the series, with a cannon behind the dish, throwing out two runners in this game trying to steal. The Phillies have won 6 of their first 7 games with Don Mattingly at the helm. As at Weintraub Cole, Cole Weintraub from Phillies, Philadelphia, NBC Sports Philadelphia, noted that after the Phillies fired Joe Girardi in 22, Rob Thompson's team won 14 of their next 16. And now, after Rob Thompson is fired, Don Mattingly has won 6 of their last 7 with the Athletics, the Rockies, and the Red Sox, their next 3 opponents. Those three teams have a combined winning percentage of .438. The Phillies are now at 15-20 on the season. So I guess the overarching question with this baseball team now, after 2 straight series wins, including winning 3 out of 4 in Miami, Justin, is this, has Don Mattingly saved the season? Like, is this Mattingly magic? Is this, I don't know what else to call it at this point, or is it just a matter of, honestly, the Marlins and the Giants didn't look like very good teams in these last 2 series. I don't know. Your feelings as the Phillies have won 3 out of 4 and 6 out of 7 now.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, you're right, cushier schedule and all that. But on the other hand, this team can lose to anybody and did lose to teams that were part of just as soft a schedule before that string of games against the Braves and Cubs. So here's what we can't really do anymore. Attribute meaning to anything.
Okay.
This is a team that is still you brought it up, but they started right. An outfield with their third string catcher, a minor league infielder, and Adolis Garcia, and then got one hit. And then the next day, everyone with an at-bat and a Phillies jersey had at least one hit. So what does anything mean at this point? Like, this feels kind of like silly to be attributing narratives and arcs and turning points to this kind of nonsense, because it is just very silly at this point in time. I feel like the broad view of this series is that they took 3 out of 4. They won a 4-game series. That's really good. They've been specifying that, I think Amaro particularly on the Phillies Talk podcast and on all broadcasts talks about, you know, the importance of picking away at winning series, which is something this team was not doing. So that's very important that they did that. They came back and beat a team that was had no problem beating them, which was also a good sign. You saw some key performances from guys like Aaron Nola. But again, if you're still attributing meaning to an Aaron Nola start, I have no help for you. But you did see Bryce Harper hit a home run the way that he has been lately and sort of carrying that offense. And you see Bryson Stott still hot, hitting John's favorite kind of home runs. There's tons of 3-run home runs. If there's more of that coming, then that'd be great. But then you look at the series a little more closely, and yeah, like these games were, I feel like the 7-2 win is a definitive, like that's a win. That's great.
Yeah.
These other 3 games, I mean, they almost blew the Friday game after taking a big lead. They get one hit in the Saturday game, starting that outfield I mentioned. And yes, I know who got the one hit. Again, if you're attributing meaning to that, I have an Aaron Nola start I can sell you as well. And then Monday, you keep waiting for them to add on to this Harper solo shot, and it just never happens. Just doesn't happen. Right. And that's very typical for this team as well. So there were good things, sure. Lizardo, got to mention his start as well. He really got back in a groove.
Yeah.
But you know, it doesn't take much distilling to look at this and say, ah, you know what? I don't know if we can say this team is really fixed, or if they're just winning games the same way with a couple luckier breaks and also some better performances in some key areas.
Yeah, Liz, I guess the question that everybody is asking themselves is, would the Phillies have gone 6-1 with Rob Thompson here? And I think there's a really good argument to be made that they might have, because they've played. We can't know that for sure, but
we're going to know.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we're never going to know whether or not, you know, this change actually worked, whether it shook the Phillies up, whether they just finally got it together. Like, it could have been any number of things. I mean, have you seen the movie The Butterfly Effect? No? Good. You shouldn't watch it.
Yeah, it's a bad movie.
The point is, terrible movie. But the changes that are made at any point can pay off who knows when. And some change that the Phillies made at one point in the last probably week or two definitely finally had an effect. So at least I think we can attribute it to that. You know, something they did worked. We don't know what it was. And it could be Don Mattingly, but it also might not be. Like, I think, Justin, you were looking for, there is no word to express they technically won, but they mostly just didn't lose. You know, the other team definitely lost. Like, the Marlins definitely lost most of those games, except for the one game they definitely won. I wish there was a word for that.
I want to be sure that, like, the Phillies did, like John said, they did play better in this series. I want to make sure I give them credit for that.
Yeah.
But Jim Salisbury was, he kind of described what I think, Liz, you're talking about in regards to the manager situation, is a move like that is kind of designed to shock a team into a better state, whether it's fair or not for the manager, whether it's the right move, whether we can talk all day about who in that locker room is going to get the reaction from the team they wanted. But I don't think they were worried about exactly who was going to come in. I think they were pretty confident. Well, at first they thought it might be Alex Cora, but after that, they had a pretty good backup plan in Don Mattingly. But it was more about the act itself, I believe.
Yeah.
And that kind of like stirring things up and of just getting, you know, waking people up, which, you know, they all sound like cliches and it does feel silly for people to be on like cruise control until their boss gets fired. But these are things that have worked. These are things that have had impacts before, whether they lead to long-term change, you know, we'll see. But, I think you could see hints of this team being in a little better headspace. And I wouldn't say that's because, oh, they didn't like Rob Thompson and they do like Don Mattingly. It's more like,
right,
there was a moment that said, this time is over, because it's, you know, now it's going to be, there's this milestone moment of Thompson getting fired. And also when they started winning a couple of games, they started lightening up a little bit. I don't know if you saw today, but they even pointed out during the series when Schwarber had that 8 in a row strikeouts and then worked a walk in his ninth at bat. And they all got up and applauded for him, and he looked at the dugout and smiled, and it was like, oh wow, this is like a nice moment for this Phillies team. Tom McCarthy, I think it was McCarthy, Humor. Said afterwards, he asked him about that, and Schwarber was like, I was like this close to having 9 strikeouts in a row. Like,
yeah, no, I mean, it's, I think so. One of the things in these first 7 games, the Phillies have only committed 1 error defensively, I believe, in these last 7 games. And so I think one of the things we've seen is the defense has played a little bit tighter. They've been a little bit crisper. I don't think we've seen as many outs on the base paths, really, over the course of this last week either. So I think those are a couple of things in which I think the offense has generally looked pretty similar. We've seen Bryson Stott and Alec Bohm come through with some bigger hits for the first time really this season. And that's made a big difference, I think, with the offense. Just those two guys hitting the ball better, hitting the ball harder, and getting some results. Bryson Stott with a couple of 3-run home runs in this series. It felt like it has been years since he has hit 3-run home runs. Like, it feels like almost like an impossibility that he would be able to do such a thing given his struggles. But those are huge when they come from the bottom of the lineup like that, where you can add on and get that big knock from a guy down at the bottom of the order. But really what allowed the Phillies to win 3 out of 4 and what's allowed them to win 6 out of 7 is the thing that we thought was going to be this team's strength all season long. And that's the starting pitching. You had Jesus Luzardo allow 2 runs in 6 1/3 innings against the team that he played for before coming to Philadelphia. And he struck out 10 and no walks. He has a 1.50 ERA in his last 3 outings. Zach Wheeler comes in on Friday, pitched a tremendous ball game. He has looked better than I thought he would when he first came back. And we can talk about this. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts for him. And then you had Aaron Nola with 6 shutout innings, and he was around the plate. He didn't leave many balls out over the middle of the plate. He was hitting the corners, which is what he's got to do because his stuff isn't amazing anymore. But he was hitting 94 on the gun. His stuff had good movement, and he wasn't leaving anything over the plate. When he does that, Aaron Nola is going to get guys out. The only problem is you don't know when which of those starts is going to come around. It just so happened that here on Monday night, Aaron Nola, his command was outstanding. It was vintage Aaron Nola command. And so what we've seen was this starting rotation, the starting pitching, do what we thought they would do. And when the starting pitching does what we think it's going to do, the offense doesn't need to be as perfect. It doesn't need to generate quite as much offense up and down the lineup. And so that was the big key, specifically in this series. The Phillies just never really allowed the Marlins to kind of catch their breath early in this game and held a lead for most of this series. There was really only in the second game where they were really trailing at any point. And that's when you're front running, that's a great way to play. And it's going to make you, you're going to feel better. You're going to play better when you're playing from ahead most of the time.
Good starting pitching allows the Phillies to improve themselves, even just to mediocre, the Phillies offense to improve itself to even mediocre-ish. And they can do good things. They have a talented offense that is just somehow still trying to find its feet. And I think they're starting to do that. And better pitching at least gives them a little bit more time to get everyone going. You know, it's nice to see Bryce Harper continuing to be productive in hitting. It's nice to see him, you know, not fall into a huge slump. I will say he should no longer be allowed to speak after games in the camera. I don't know if anyone has heard him lately, but he could not sound more checked out. And I think he's always sounded that way somewhat, but my God, he sounds like he is sleeping through his on-field his post-game interview. It was bizarre.
Well, starting pitching is this team's difference. It's like the Phillies' advantage. So they've made the offense that they have stand up before because the starting pitching has been there. So in a way, it's almost calming because we've spent a lot of time and other people have spent a lot of time listing everything that they've seen wrong with the Phillies so far this year, because so much seems like it has gone wrong for the Phillies. But you don't have to fix everything when the starting pitching is like the main thing that is supposed to be a strength, but is really inconsistent. Straightening that out, whether, you know, and you say that like it's somebody's job to straighten it out. Each individual guy straightening it out is a huge advantage for this team, because that's how it's supposed to operate. It's not even really an advantage. It's just supposed to be protocol that this team gets a great starting pitching performance, or even just a passable starting pitching performance, and then the offense can score two or three runs at least and make that work. Obviously, tonight they didn't even score that many, but still, the starting pitching was good enough to make it stand up. And man, Nola specifically, having watched, you know, watching this team this season, and Aaron Nola, I don't know about you, but he let that runner on in the sixth when I was like, sure would be nice to say six shutout innings, but there's that guy. And then he lets him get to second, and then they get him in a rundown after he picks him off, and they manage to not get him out. And so there's a guy in scoring position with a one run lead. And I was like, this is it, man. He's going to give up. It's not even like he's going to tie the game. He's going to give up a bomb and come out. And then nobody's even going to talk about how well he pitched for the first, you know, most of his start. And that didn't happen. So that was also a nice little difference for the Phillies tonight, too, because, you know, I think it was a week ago I said it was nice to see bad breaks happen to the other team, because the Phillies have really suffered from a lot of them, too. And this night, you know, I wouldn't call that entire sequence bad breaks for the Marlins, but eventually it did go the Phillies' way. And that's been a difference for you. And that comes from getting strong starting pitching. It's really just the spine of every win is a great start from a Phillies starter. And seeing more of that is always going to be good news for this team.
Are you guys how impressed are you guys by Zach Wheeler's performance in his first two starts? Given some of his rehab starts that he had in Reading and Lehigh Valley, they were kind of up and down. I wasn't sure that he'd hit the ground running the way that he has here in his two starts since coming back. But even though the velocity was down a little bit on Friday, I mentioned a second ago, six innings, three hits, one run, two walks, eight strikeouts, even with his velocity down a little bit. I think he got his up to his fastball peaked at 94.7 miles an hour, but he was really utilizing a lot of his secondary pitches. He was throwing splitters to left-handers. He was throwing sweepers to right-handers. And then the second time through the order, he started throwing his curveball a lot more. So really realized he didn't have the fastball to just kind of blow people away up in the zone, was really locating all of his breaking stuff, and seems like, you know, he's going to have to become kind of a different pitcher here as he recovers from the thoracic outlet syndrome. But I mean, he retired 16 of 19 batters at one point in this game after giving up back-to-back doubles to put his team in a quick 1-0 hole. I mean, I was expecting Justin, more struggles from Zach Wheeler right out of the chute. I didn't think that we would get a couple of starts right out of the gate like this. And I'm, you know, I think he's really helped also. Maybe just his presence has helped the rest of the guys in the starting rotation to kind of find their feet.
Yeah, there was sort of a confluence of major events around the same time with Thompson getting fired and Mattingly coming in and Wheeler's return. We're all kind of like there's a cloud of events that you could really use as a line of demarcation between parts of the Phillies season, which again goes back to that, you know, some shocking the system. A big act can do that for a team, but also getting a guy back like Zach Wheeler can also be a shock of sorts. Especially when they kind of set the table to make it sound like he's, you know, get ready, he's going to be on this pitch count. And he's like, yeah, you know, just keep an open mind about what a good pitching start is. And then he comes out and he's like, just kidding, I'm going to win the Cy Young. It was Nathan Ackerman on Phillies Nation who said that Wheeler, the day he returned, ever since then, when the Phillies ended a losing streak and he came back, they've had a combined 3.47 ERA, 10th in baseball, and their strikeout to walk ratio is up to 19.1%, which is third in baseball. I mean, there's just no arguing with that difference. You can say it was like because of him or he's part of it, but like clearly that day is chosen as a reason for that sample size, and the results since then have been remarkably better, or at least significantly better. And like you said, pitchers have had to acquiesce to aging and changing because velocity is down, you know, for years, forever. And I don't doubt that Zach Wheeler is going to be able to evolve like that. I mean, clearly he hasn't had much of an issue coming back from the condition he was in and the amount of time, I think 253 days that he's been without starting pitching for the Phillies. So it's still remarkably good to see him hitting the velocity that he has, because he was sticking in the low 90s during his minor league time. So, you know, this is very much a positive development for the Phillies and for Zach Wheeler and for anybody who watches the Phillies, because Wheeler is so important to this team. And I think we were all ready to give him a little grace period here, even though the team was struggling as much as they were. But it's Zach Wheeler, man. He doesn't need it.
Yeah. Liz, what about what about Andrew Painter? He was and when you look at his line at the end of the day in the game on Saturday that they lost 4-0, he went 5 innings, gave up 7 hits, 3 runs, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts, and 99 pitches, but walked in 2 runs in that start. Now, it really wouldn't have mattered because the offense, again, got 1 hit. He could have been darn near perfect and probably still would have lost the game. And at the end of the day, you want more than 5 innings out of your starting pitcher. But again, for Andrew Painter, who's a rookie, 5 innings, 3 runs, 7 hits, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts. I mean, that's 10 base runners in 5 innings. That's 2 base runners an inning as you're averaging that out. And now on the season, in 6 games, 29 innings, he has a 5.28 ERA. Just as comparison, last year in AAA, he had a 5.40 ERA. Although the FIP, the fielding independent pitching, much lower, 3.60 as compared to 4.90 last year in his 22 AAA starts. So right now, the underlying metrics are telling you that he's been better than the ERA would suggest, but he also has had innings where those big blow-up innings where he's so close to kind of finishing in his last start. You know, he almost got them through 6 innings, but he was left in for a one hitter too long against the Atlanta Braves, and it cost him a big inning. And so I don't know if you feel like this is, like, from what you're seeing from him, is this what you imagined he would look like when he came up, or any? Because I feel like a somewhat of a level of disappointment, but I also realize that's probably not fair to Andrew Painter. I think we just all assumed he would just be blowing guys away when he finally did make it to the majors.
Yeah, that time he lost in the surgery he had, I think it's hard to remember it, especially to take it into account given what he was before. But he's decidedly a different pitcher. I think he still has the ability to do those things, but I don't necessarily know if he can do them with the frequency that we once thought he could. And considering right now he's the fifth starter, you know, what he's doing isn't hideous. It's not tragic. It doesn't need to be replaced immediately. And I think that that's good for him, because if he was worse, I think they might I mean, I don't know who they'd bring up, but they might consider sending him down. And I think he needs to continue to learn at the major league level. The fact that he does have those blow up innings. He is walking in runners. It's very frustrating to see. But I think giving him time is what we were going to give Zach Wheeler. He's earned it. But in a way, Andrew Painter is brand new and he's earned time as well. And I think giving him the time to continue to learn and figure out what type of pitcher he needs to be now is important for his future and the Phillies' future.
If you were going to bring Painter up just to demote him by May, there was no reason to bring him up.
Exactly.
He's right. Got a way too more important a role here. And you've talked up how way too important a role here that he is going to have this year. Remember, this training camp was all about getting the young guys involved. So, yeah, I don't think I certainly don't think the Phillies. I feel like I had a more measured set of expectations for Painter coming up here than you were describing, John, about expecting him to just blow hitters away. I think if he had come up and the surgery thing had never happened, I was completely buying into all the hype from Baseball America and everything. I felt like I was maybe underrating him for a while, but you know, the absence, the surgery, the bounce back, the rehab, all of that. You know, you come up, it's a miracle the guy's like coming back to the back on track to be in the majors and then making the team, let alone pitching like an ace. You know, there's time for that, and they're going to give him time because they believe his ceiling is very high, higher than it's been so far. And I think it's very normal to be suffering or not suffering, but needing to adjust in the major leagues and having games where you walk in two runs. Is it fun to watch? Absolutely not. Do I feel this rational in the moment? Of course I don't. But I know things like that are going to happen, and the Phillies know that too. And like I said, you don't put him on the team in April and then create a pitching gap situation for yourself in May just to have, what, Taiwan Walker step into that role? Like, we just moved on from that to an extent.
Yeah. And I will say, too, opponents are hitting .301 off of him right now, a whip of 1.59, but he also has a batting average on balls in play of .370 here in the early going. So that's extremely high.
Can batters who face Andrew Painter hit cleanup for the Phillies? Because that'd be pretty solid.
Mm-hmm. That would be nice if we could arrange that. The Hurricanes score at the very end of overtime. Flyers lose 3-2. Everybody. So the Phillies
that's going to leave a bad taste in everyone's mouth.
Yep. But the Phillies are the saviors of Philadelphia this weekend. Who would have thought this a week ago? The Phillies have saved the city on an otherwise gloomy evening. The Phillies won
louder, John. Let's see what happens.
I feel like there's a lot of people in this city who don't know the score of the Phillies game right now and may not know until tomorrow.
Yeah. That's why they're going to come here and we'll talk to them and we'll listen, you know, let them know that, you know, listen, if the Sixers and the Flyers, you know, you could, you know, waste your time there, but you know, the Phillies, they've always got you. They've always got you. They got this.
Well, I forgot to mention in the Aaron Nola discussion, he allowed a hit in the first inning, but got out of it without anything happening. And but like every ball hit, like there's fly balls to the warning track and like line drive outs, and you're like, okay.
Clutching your chest every time.
Tom McCarthy, as they went to commercial, was like, 10-pitch inning for Nola. All right, well, that wasn't bad. We'll go to the second. And if it was like this moment of lucidity for T-Mac, it was like, oh, wait, is he gripping the edge of his desk watching Nola pitch every time, too?
It's kind of comforting, like, isn't it?
Like, yeah, just finished a conversation talking down someone who was like, I don't want to watch this guy pitch. And he was like, oh, listen, it could be fine. It could be totally fine.
Oh, look, it was fine. How weird.
And it was.
Something interesting that's going to be going on this week in Philadelphia, and that is that Don Mattingly is going to be calling different members of the organization, staff and others will meet early this week in Philadelphia to examine everything that the team is doing. And he said this isn't being spurred on by anything necessarily that's happening with the Phillies. He's bringing an idea, something that they did in Toronto, and he wants to implement it here in Philadelphia. And it's the whole staff. It's not just like Don, he said, it's not just me and another guy. It's the whole staff, part of the front office, whatever. These are the facts. This is where we are in reality. You guys hear me talk about it. You play good baseball. Are we playing good baseball? Are we not? What are we doing according to the league? Where do we rank? It's not something that we're putting in. It's more like that I liked it in Toronto. I thought it was a good thing, and you bring it with you. So they're going to be talking about a lot of the things that have been going on with the team and looking at the different areas where they may have been struggling. And one of the areas is undoubtedly going to be the defense. And we talked about the fact the Phillies are playing better defense under Don Mattingly. But I don't know if you guys saw this note. This was in Todd Zielecki's email that he sent out, the Phillies beat email. Defensive runs saved is a defensive metric that is supposed to take a look at all aspects of a team's defense. And according to defensive runs saved, the Phillies entered Sunday's game against Miami last in the majors with negative 28 defensive runs saved. The next closest team is the A's with negative 8. Now, we can all see with our eyes that the defense has not been good so far this year, but that seems impossibly bad. They have Justin Crawford, who, again, has had his issues in center field. He came into the season. We didn't know exactly what he was going to look like in center field, as the worst-rated defensive player in baseball right now. Negative 6 defensive runs saved, leading all outfielders in that category, leading in a bad way. If you look at StatCast and outs above average, the Phillies are tied for 27th with negative 11. Again, really bad, but that feels more like kind of... I agree with Todd Zielecki when he says it's still bad, obviously, but it's more in line with reality. I think that's the case. I think that's true. Yeah. I don't know what defensive run saved is looking at. I think they also factor in catcher framing with all of that. Realmuto is not a good framer, and he also hasn't been behind the plate to throw runners out. We saw Stubbs do it here on Monday night, but that's not something that Marchand had been doing very much of. So, I mean, I think this is an interesting thing that the Phillies are going to be doing, talking about different areas of the team where maybe they're falling short or where things are lacking. But Liz, what do you think about getting together and doing this? And is there any aspect of the team, any area of the team that you think that they should look at in addition to, like, you know, whether it's the defense or whether it's the offense and some of the poor performances we've seen there or something in the relief pitchers?
Well, first, I want to say that I love Mattingly's openness and transparency. Like, he's actually talking about things he wants to do and things that he's thinking. And I feel like that's one of the things we never really got from Rob Thompson. You know, he was like the closed lid on top of the Phillies clubhouse. And while this isn't giving away any details about the clubhouse, it is at least telling him, telling us that he wants to know. He wants to bring more ideas, and he thought something was successful in Toronto and they made it to the World Series last year. Why not do it here? The Phillies like things that World Series teams do because they also want to be a World Series winning team again. So I'm really excited about that. I would hope that he focuses a little bit more on mental skills. If there's anything that, you know, seeing the Phillies, you know, years later, yet again, wake up after a manager's been fired and do better still speaks to me of it. Just what is happening in this clubhouse? And it's been the question we've all been having for every year except for 2022, I think. We've all been wondering what's going on. And, you know, just like for most teams, we don't know. But I think Mattingly taking an active interest in some of this is a really good idea. And I hope he sees the value in some increasing mental skills, something for the team, because I feel like they could all benefit from that.
Can you imagine if former Phillies manager and current Marlins general manager Gabe Kapler got everybody in the same room from top to bottom at an age defined by poor communication and miscommunication and total dysfunction? I'm not saying it would have fixed anything. It just might have been very funny to hear all those people in the same room.
Might have actually began to leak at that point.
This is
gotten reports from the inside.
This is just an all hands meeting, sounds like, with the point of which is to check in, not individually, but like with the team as an entity, where they're at, what's their situation, what are they trying to do? And I just feel like that's such a appropriate reaction to this, just kind of like stripping them bare and being like, all right, look, let's start with the broadest, most simple question. What do we want to do? Okay, great. What's happening to deter us from that? What are our obstacles to that?
Yeah.
What can we work on? Let's just say things out loud. I feel like that's something that Phillies are not really excelling at the moment. And I'm not saying to me, I don't need to know what's going on in that locker room. And I don't really even want to know what's going on in that locker room in a lot of ways. So I just want them to play like a team that, you know, can make eye contact with each other.
Yeah.
And I don't think things are that dire. I don't think things are bad at all. It's more about communication, and it's more about just like being clear with each other. And that's what like something like this that Mattingly is setting up is really good for. And even if you're not crying yourself to sleep over Rob Thompson's dismissal, this is still healthier, I think, whether yeah. people participating in it realize it or not. It is a healthier track to process and kind of collect yourself. And he planned this for when they get home from this road trip. That was the other aspect of this, is that he was like, I don't think everybody's really had a, you know, and people are adults, and it's not like they were, you know, they went through a horrible trauma together. But, you know, Rob Thompson was fired. Their boss and coworker, a guy that we are to understand that they enjoyed playing for at least part of the time he was here, and just giving people a time to, I'm not saying it's gonna be a therapy session, but like just giving people a pause, getting everybody in the mm-hmm. same room and being like, where are we at after this, you know, historic moment from franchise history that'll be like, you know, marked as an era. The Rob Thompson era ended, and now they're on the other side of it. So like, let's talk about where we are. Phillies have been a clunky, sputtering yeah. mess that's rolled into town on three tires and one headlight all season. I like the idea of them, you know, even having just an hour of clear, direct communication with each other. I hope it's fruitful.
And I think this is going to be actual field level stuff too. Like, I mean, I mm-hmm. think it's going to actually be, it's going to, I mean, there'll probably be stuff about like, you know, the clubhouse. And I feel like the clubhouse is in a good place. I mean, I don't know, but I think of some of the problems that were there last year are maybe not there now. One of them is probably playing in San Diego at the moment.
When you talk about the clubhouse, you're not talking about it being a bad clubhouse for the players. It's more that it is clearly a different atmosphere yeah. than when this team was at its most successful, and it was the same team. Yeah. So that's why you point to the clubhouse.
It's tense. It's they've got pressure on them. It's tense. You know, there's a fear of failure now that wasn't there, I don't think, before, especially in 22 and 23. I mean, up until those last two games in the NLCS of 2023, that team was rollicking. That team was rolling. So, yes. I mean, I look at 23 as maybe even a better example of the team humming on all cylinders for a lot of that season, as opposed to 22, because they kind of got rickety there at the end of the regular season before the playoffs rolled around. But I mean, it has been a clubhouse with a lot of pressure on it, and I think they have been feeling that. But I think it sounded to me like this is going to be, you know, they're going to get some of the stat folks in there. They're going to get some of the, you know, the they're going to get the coaching staff in there. They're going to get a lot of people together to kind of do a state of the team. Like, hey, let's really dig down granularly into, what do we stink at right now? What do we excel at, and what do we stink at? We stink at hitting fastballs. Okay, how do we go about fixing this as a team and specific players? How do we get better at fixing our ability to hit fastballs? We were great at it last year. We've always been great at hitting fastballs. Why do we stink? Why can't we hit left-handed pitching? And no, it's not because we don't have a left-hander somewhere in the organization that can throw batting practice to us. You've seen left-handed pitching before. That's not what this is. Why can't we hit left-handed starters? Like, why has that been such a big problem? Let's figure that out. Let's figure out the defense. If the base running was still an issue, why are we making so many damn outs on the bases? Let's figure that out. Like, I mean, I think there's going to be real-time action. Maybe they'll have a discussion about the bullpen and the different roles there. You know, I mean, I think the bullpen had a good night here on Monday night. Jose Alvarado, Tanner Banks, two guys who have struggled. Brad Keller, all guys with high ERAs, pitched scoreless innings in this one to secure the 1-0 win. So that was good to see. But when you've got a team like the Phillies, who now they're 15-20, starting to slowly dig their way out of the hole that they and the mess that they made for themselves, there have got to be real world solutions. It can't just be, oh, we've got a new manager and now they're playing better, right? I mean, it's never that simple. So I think that's what a lot of this is going to be. It's going to be a lot of looking at the numbers and trying to see what exactly is it we're struggling with. And then, okay, give us solutions. How do we fix this?
Do you think it's possible to come up with answers like that in the meeting? I mean, I guess Mattingly does, and I guess they were able to be successful at that in Toronto because that's where he's bringing it from. But I guess also what I want to mention is that we talk about the atmosphere around this team and comparing to earlier versions of this team from a few years ago. And, you know, when you're watching Garrett Stubbs go 1-for-30 over a stretch of like a bunch of games, it's a lot easier to say, I don't need to see this guy get a bunch of hacks. He certainly doesn't need long-term playing time. Like, I think we know what we got here. Like, we're not trying to figure anything out. This guy's just, you know, let's improve the backup catcher position is never a priority. But, you know, it just gets frustrating watching a guy who's not proficient in offense get a bunch of at-bats. But Stubbs being back with the team has brought this conversation back up that his presence on the team tends to make them better, and you can attribute it to whatever you want, but it typically seems like it does. And even Zalecki was saying, look, he's kind of the ideal 26th man because you don't need your 26th man to be good at anything. He just has to be kind of passable at everything.
Right. I mean,
and that's what they're making him into.
They released Dylan Moore in order to hold on to Garrett Stubbs and have technically three catchers on the roster. But that's why, I mean, we said at the beginning of the season when they were trying Garrett Stubbs out in left field, we laughed our butts off about it because I made
still
the joke.
Don't want it.
Right. Yeah, still. Didn't we make like an over under of Garrett Stubbs starts in the outfield? And I put the number at 0.5 or something like that. I thought, no way. There's no way Garrett Stubbs is starting a game in the outfield for this team. Well, lo and behold. Garrett Stubbs.
I mean, earlier this season, I was saying, well, I can't believe I'm seeing Kyle Schwarber starting in left field.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
we've already done
that adventure as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's not that I feel like Stubbs does get credit where credit's due, but it's just one of those things. Like, I don't think I want to say I fully dismissed the intangibles that he brings to the club, but at the same time, again, you watch him go through some stretches and it's like, yeah, I'm not saying this is a priority, but can we not do better here? Like, this seems pretty bad. Like, when you say Justin Crawford is the worst defender in baseball, I feel like that can't be true.
It can't be
right. But if you said Garrett Stubbs is like, you know, ranks offensively below a toad on the side of the road, I'd be like, maybe.
Well, Garrett Stubbs has matched Rafael Marchand's hit total already for the season. I believe that number stands at 2. Stubbs has done it in 15 plate appearances as opposed to about 50 for Rafael Marchand. So,
Oh, my God.
Whoever makes the team win.
Yeah. Well, what'll help make the team win is Joan Duran is about to make his return. The Phillies, they're expected to activate him for the game on Tuesday. Duran is a 1.35 ERA and 5 saves in 7 appearances with the team so far this year. Since he left, the Phillies bullpen has a 4.75 ERA. So that is not so great, but they haven't really missed him a whole lot because they just haven't had a lot of save opportunities over the course of the last couple of weeks, up until these last few games against the Marlins. Brad Keller got another one here on Monday. He got one on Friday as well. And JT Realmuto returned to the team, as we were just talking about, with the three catchers over the course of the weekend. So a good weekend by the Phillies in Miami. Again, I don't know that they played a great opponent, but you know what? That, like Justin, you said earlier, they may lose to anybody, and they have already lost to anybody this year. So good to see them.
Nowhere to go but up.
That's right. Nowhere to go but up. Let's finish up with some final thoughts here as we wrap up this roundtable edition. Justin, any final thoughts before we go?
Well, one thing, we all pretty much came to terms early in the offseason with the Phillies not getting any of the Japanese players who were on the market, but I don't know if you're tracking Munetaka Murakami's career in Chicago, but boy, it'd be nice to have the guy who just tied Aaron Judge for the MLB lead in home runs hitting in this lineup. That sure would be a nice blast of sunshine, but hey, whatever. Team's playing better. Took 3 out of 4. Other thing I want to mention, guess what's back? The Phillies should trade for Mike Trout, says Keith Law in The Athletic.
Right. No. He thinks
maybe they could give up Justin Crawford or Gage Wood because, and I don't know if you knew this, but apparently this Trout character hails from South Jersey and is some kind of an Eagles fan.
What?
Law feels this is a strong enough point to include, well, he didn't feel this way, I guess. The Athletic feels strong. This is a strong enough point to include an image of Trout in the stands at an Eagles game, you know, celebrating with one of the players because, you know, it's that much of a factor in him coming to Philadelphia. I'm not going to say the thing I always say here because I've said it enough over the years. I'll just say that I'll just say that the Eagles being in Philadelphia, where the Phillies play, has never been a draw to Mike Trout as far as we can tell. Not enough to even be ever close to reportedly being like signing with the Phillies. He chose to stay in Anaheim, answering this question pretty much once and for all. And he signed an extension to stay there a year after the Eagles had won the Super Bowl. If there was ever a time to move to Philly and be an Eagles fan, it was during a title defense season when you can bask in the Super Bowl that's already secured and then watch them contend for another. Trout didn't move then because this isn't something that is interesting to him. It seems like extremely rich guy Mike Trout has no problem getting to plenty of Eagles games without having to play for the Phillies. You could look at it as he was just never into the idea enough, or the Phillies were never that desirable to him, or whatever. But Trout's Eagles fandom hasn't brought him to Millville for the last 10 years, so I don't see why you would do it now, giving up your center fielder that you've made like a central part of the season, or Gage Wood, one of your better prospects of a thin system.
Well, and the system is even thinner because you don't know what's going on with Aiden Miller. Aiden Miller is still not, as far as I can tell, still not swinging a baseball bat because of now it appears to be a chronic bad back. Your top prospect, who rose to number 6 overall, I think, at one point, is not playing baseball. And he missed it's just not. This is a really, we haven't talked much about this because we just haven't been getting much information about it, but this is a really, really worrisome situation now. And so, yes, you're going to give up prospects for Mike Trout, who's the salary, the money is still incredibly high. You never know when Mike Trout is going to, I mean, basically Keith Law is saying, yes, the Angels should get rid of him as soon as possible before he blows up again. That's the implication before this back
He's
comes
an idiot.
Sorry,
Keith Law's an idiot.
Well, no,
you really want to add another 35-year-old to this roster at this point
in
time.
From the Angels,
he is having a resurgence. I can't deny that.
Yeah,
but
he's playing great. But I'm just saying, I get what Keith Law is saying. Like writing it from the Angels' perspective, like yes, you should try to find somebody to take him. Now, what does that trade package look like in return? I mean, it probably does involve Gage Wood. It probably involves either Justin Crawford or Dante Norrie because both are center fielders. There's not really enough room for both of them. So they both kind of have similar profiles. You probably do have to trade one of them. You know, we don't have to, but it probably would be smart to trade one of those guys in order to get something for your big league roster because you're not going to play two kind of weak hitting left-handed outfielders in the same outfield. That's just not going to be all that productive. So, I mean, I could see a scenario where Justin Crawford gets moved if they like Dante Norrie's defensive upside and the way he's swinging the bat now. It seems like he's developing as an offensive prospect. But trading for Mike Trout, no, sir, no, sir, no, sir. No.
To your point, I think is only fair to frame Keith Law. I don't think he said, you're right. He probably wasn't then saying that they should trade for Mike Trout, but that they could. And the examples he offered were uncompelling to me. And the Eagles fandom thing coming up again was just like, we can let this go, man. This clearly is not a driving force for him. It doesn't have to be for us.
It's like the oldest. It's like he just straight up copy pasted something he wrote years ago. Like, that's all I'm thinking. That makes no sense to say now. He's having a resurgence. Great time to trade for him. Adding another often injured player to the Phillies roster. That's all we need.
All right, Liz, is that your final thought? Do you have any other final thoughts to share with the class?
I am dog sitting for my parents this week. My parents' lovely, wonderful dog, Della. And I'm just going to apologize to her and release it into the universe because she is very confused as to what's been happening for the last hour. She's like, why is she talking? Why is she not in the normal place that she is at night? She's got a quizzical look and she's wondering what's up. So I'm very sorry, Della.
Just give her treats and then it'll be a normal thing.
Oh, I'll just also add one more thing. I think my theory on the Mets and Phillies is still alive, even though the plot twist of them both being terrible to start the season did away with that narrative concept of one of them would prove that what they had done was the right direction. Like one of them ran it back and one of them blew up their core. So with that out the window, I think now the dividing line is aren't going to fire their manager,
yep.
But the Phillies did. So now we will see whose success is dictated by that. I don't know if you've watched the Mets recently. They don't seem to be getting better.
No.
So we'll see if this pans out as well.
No, they don't. No, they don't. But they do seem committed to Carlos Mendoza, at least for now, up there in New York. Interesting decisions. Interesting decisions. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Want to encourage everybody to watch our show over on YouTube, the WHYY YouTube channel. Of course, all the roundtable episodes can appear there. We, of course, also exist in an audio-only format, so you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. And please share it with your friends and your family. Leave a 5-star rating. Also, if you like the show, give us a little review. That also helps a great deal, so we'd appreciate it if you did that, too. And you can also send us an email, hittinseason@billypenn.com. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.